To get us started off, I want to introduce Professor Dr. Anthony Montero. Some of you know who he is. And I'm not going to say much because I've asked him to explain or kind of give us a background of his situation and tie that in with everything that Ramona's going to talk about as well. So if you could join me in welcoming Dr. Anthony Montero.
Thank you very much, and I'm very happy to be here, and I'd like to congratulate the people who organized this. This is quite an event, especially during this time in the history of this country when the younger generation has decided that it will assume its place in history, from Ferguson to Baltimore, to Palestine, and throughout the world. So I'm very happy to be here. And of course, to introduce Ramona Africa, a woman whose position in history is alongside such important figures as Assata Shakur, Angela Davis, Huey P. Newton, and of course, the great Mumia Abdul-Jamal. I've known Ramona for about 30 years or more, and there's still a lot I don't know about Ramona. There's still many questions that I'd like to ask Ramona, because I think in answering certain questions about Ramona, we come to understand precisely how revolutionaries are created, the circumstances socially, politically, morally, and what it is about them that makes them the people that they are. About 3 years ago, I organized at Temple University and at the Church of the Advocate a conference on the life of an equally extraordinary woman, Pam Africa. And it was entitled, Pam Africa, Our Revolutionary Daughter of the Dust. And I had committed to the people there and to myself that we would follow up with a similar conference on the life of Ramona Africa. But events intervened that I'll talk about in a minute, and I haven't been able to do that yet. But as a social scientist, I'm always interested in the scientific study of the lives of extraordinary people. But one of the things that I know about Ramona, and of course the demonization of the mass media would keep this from people, is that she is driven by a profound sense of morality linked to the truth. And along with that moral drivenness is an unbelievable will. You know, one would think that all that Ramona has been through, surviving the police bombing of the Move family house, witnessing the incineration of 11 people and their animals, being convicted of the crime that was committed against her and doing 11 years in prison, coming out and still fighting, having to witness every form of the travesty and perversion of justice that's possible, including the imprisonment of 9 of her family members, seeing 2 of them die, or I should say murdered, in prison, Merle and Phil Africa. One would think that having experienced all of that, Ramona would be a pessimistic person. But it's quite the opposite. Ramona is an exemplary figure. She is what a revolutionary looks like in this time and in this space, in the context of the American Empire, the major purveyor of violence in the world. But then, you know, we're here. And I like to say this is a testimony to your willingness to fight against all of the efforts to criminalize dissent. To say that if you go against this government, if you oppose the police, if you go against the dominant cultural and political line of this nation, then there's something wrong with you and you have to be shut down. That's why the prison authorities and the government of the state of Pennsylvania are now trying to kill Mumia Abu-Jamal. They couldn't do it so-called legally. They failed there as a result of the people's resistance. They have attempted to do it through a profoundly unconstitutional act, which is about to be challenged and overturned. Failing in all of this, they've now tried to assassinate him through medical neglect. And it's only the people who will save Mumia. And believe me, it is true. Can I just tell a small story about when I visited Mumia? You know, Mumia and I are from the same part of North Philadelphia. A lot of people don't know a lot about North Philadelphia. It's called the Tenderloin. But we can talk about that later. And I hadn't seen Mumia for 30 years. And so Pam said, Tony, Mumia wants to see you. So we were going up there. I said, Pam, he is not going to recognize me. She said, yes, he is. Yes, he is. Well, when I got there, he did. And I went there twice. The next week I went up. But I asked Mumia, and we were talking just like we would talk in the street, not like you hear him talking. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal. Using different words that I won't use up here. But I said, Mumia, how were you able to survive 30 years on death row? And he said, simply because I knew I was loved. It's just that simple. And he knows that he is loved when people stand up on his behalf. And so now Mumia needs us more than ever. More than ever, we must all make a renewed commitment to speak his name whenever we can, and to let the world know that we love Mumia and that Mumia will never walk alone. But this, yes, we can clap. But this is parallel to the ludicrous and insane attack upon Cornel West by Michael Eric Dyson just this past week. To attack Cornel West is to attack dissent itself. To attack one of the great figures of opposition to war and repression in this nation today, one of the great global public intellectuals, Mumia and Cornel, represent perhaps two of the greatest intellectual threats to the United States government at this time in our history, especially at a time when Cornel, standing among young people, especially young black people, is greater than Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton. And then when you add Mumia to it, they have double trouble. Finally, let me say this, my own situation. The reason I speak about standing up to dissent is because I was fired from my job at Temple University. Not because I was not liked by most of the students and appreciated by a good part of the faculty, but because I dared to stand up and allow my voice to be united with the poor and working people of the very area where I am from in North Philadelphia. That is the crime of crimes. And so it was that after we had fought to save the character of African American studies from a dean upon her arrival at Temple, said to us in the African American Studies department, when asked the simple question, how do you see our relationship to the black community, responded as we all sat in the middle of North Philadelphia, I don't see a black community. It was this woman who felt that she was going to decide the character of African American studies. Well, we had other plans. We fought Malefe Asante, who had previously been the chair of the department, was reinstated because the community united with the students and said, this is the man that we will put in this position. However, he betrayed the students and the community and conspired almost immediately to have me removed. And it wasn't so much a personal thing as it was political. As he said in one of his Facebook entries, Dr. Montero is not a scholar. And if you read Dyson's attack upon Cornell, he said, Cornell West is not a scholar. Parentheses. Michael Eric Dyson is the arbiter of scholarship? I mean, give me a break, end parentheses. But he said that I'm not a scholar, but I am a low-level purveyor of Marxism and other anti-African ideas. And then he went on to say that I am nothing but a propagandist and a communist apparatchik. Parentheses. What school did he go to learn that language? That's out of the Cold War J. Edgar Hoover playbook. But I'll end on this. But we are returning to that type of neo-McCarthyism, where dissent is criminal. And therefore, for you to have invited Ramona Africa, a woman who in the post-Black Power, post-Civil Rights moment of American history held high the banner of resistance and revolutionary optimism that will nourish the spirit of the young generation that now has decided they are going to assume the stage of history. Sister Ramona Africa.